to The Scalpel, where we dissect ideas, not people. Ideas have consequences. Bad ideas have victims. Good ideas have beneficiaries. So it's important to know the difference between good ideas and bad ones, true ones and false ones. Even further than that, we seek to develop discernment, defined by Charles Spurgeon as not knowing the difference between right and wrong, but knowing the difference between right and almost right. This show is about thinking worldviewishly, it's about dialoguing civilly, and it's about reasoning logically, and all of this in the interest of discerning what is right. Hello everyone, it's great to have you with us today. I'm your host, Jim Schultz, scrubbing in today from the OR at KCIW Radio, 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon. In our last show, we got logical, Captain. We described good and bad argument types. Why? Because trying to evaluate ideas without logic is like trying to do brain surgery with no medical training. Today, we need to discuss worldviews that are influencing our culture. And we'll do that by defining worldview and telling you some basic questions worldviews answer. Then we'll suggest a few tests we can use to figure out which ideas are actually true. Lots of worldviews promote their ideas. If you don't know much about these perspectives, you could be sort of like a person with a blender full of foods that don't really mesh well together and hitting puree. You got some squid, some pork, some ketchup, some Rocky Road ice cream in there, maybe some cabbage. I wouldn't drink that stuff. Ideas can sound good and feel good to you, but we need to know how to evaluate them for truth and consistency. I've had students over the years jokingly say that I've ruined movies and music for them because now they understand all those messages coming at them. It's like they've received a way to filter those messages so they can eat the meat and spit out the bones, whereas before they were crunching up those bones too. Well, I want to ruin you too. I want to teach you how to think worldviewishly. And I'm going to be real transparent with you here today. Some of this material comes from a philosophy lecture I used to give when I taught philosophy at Salem Bible College. And a lot of this material comes from James Sire, the late James Sire, one of the very influential Christians who, along with Francis Schaeffer, especially was instrumental in getting Christians to think more worldviewishly. Because evangelical Christianity has had a very strong anti-intellectual strain in it for a couple hundred years, and we've sought to overcome that. Well, James Sire did more than his fair share to overcome that. So a couple of his books and some of his lectures from a class on worldviews that I audited when I was at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School will be featured here. James Sire defines a worldview as a set of beliefs which we hold about the basic makeup of the world. A set of beliefs which we hold about the basic makeup of the world. Now, those beliefs may be true, partially true, or entirely false, and we may hold those beliefs consciously or subconsciously, like we've got this assumption that we don't even necessarily identify, that we're using to judge and filter data and ideas. We may hold these ideas consistently or inconsistently. That is, we may have ideas at the heart of our belief system that contradict each other, but nevertheless, everyone has a worldview. There's something like sunglasses, tinted blue, red, yellow, or various colors, and each worldview is a different color. If you're wearing blue tinted lenses, everything you see looks blue. In fact, you can go even further and speak of worldviews can sometimes have blind spots. If you are coming from a certain perspective, like materialism, the notion that the only things that exist are material things, your blind spot is anything and everything that may exist that is not material. So if there are realities like God or souls or, you know, angels or heaven, hell, or those sorts of things, that's all in your blind spot. So your worldview can keep you from seeing things or can help you to see things that are there. So it becomes incredibly important. Make sure you're wearing the right pair of sunglasses to perceive truth. So worldviews answer questions like these, and I'm going to give you James Sire's basic questions of a worldview from his book. This is from The Universe Next Door. The first question is, what is prime reality, the really real? What is ultimate reality? Is it matter, or is it a personal God distinct from creation? Or perhaps it's an impersonal God that includes all of us and everything, a little bit like the Force in Star Wars. It is amazing how that foundational belief about ultimate reality dictates many of your other beliefs. We'll try to illustrate that later on. A second question is, what is the nature of external reality, the world around us? Is it created or uncreated? Is it chaotic or orderly, for example? A third question, what is a human being? A sleeping God, perhaps? A God who doesn't know he or she is a God yet? Or a person made in God's image with both physical and non-physical aspects? Or perhaps human beings are merely complex machines, material beings with no spiritual aspect or soul? This brings to mind a movie I watched years ago, Bicentennial Man. Perhaps you've watched this with Robin Williams. It's based on a short story by Isaac Asimov, who signed a secular humanist declaration in 1980. And you can see a secular humanist worldview powerfully illustrated in this movie. But it's about this robot, played by Robin Williams, who developed human traits like emotions, a sense of humor, and personality, and so forth. The more this happened, the more he sought to develop into a human being, even taking a name, Andrew. But the powers that be, a one-world government, kept denying his humanity. They just wouldn't admit he was human. The film is posing the question, what makes us human? Is it personality? Is it emotion? Freedom? Mortality, ultimately, is what he thinks might make him human. Asimov's humanist materialist view was used to answer the question. At one point, one of his human friends said of Andrew, he has become every bit as complex as we are. Well, that's Asimov's perspective about what a human being is, a complex machine. The robot's evolution was a metaphor for human evolution. We've simply grown more and more complex, in our case, by chance. Now, that's really different from the Christian perspective that we are made in God's image and that there is a spiritual aspect to us. But these answers flow directly from the answers to the first question, what is ultimate reality? The humanist says it's matter and reduces humans to complex machines, whereas the Christian says ultimate reality is God and humans are those made in God's image. And then, of course, those views have profound implications for your view of human rights, human value, ethics issues, and all the meaning of life, all sorts of things. So this worldview stuff, it might make our head hurt a little bit, but it's like, man, it's like getting a shot in the arm. You know, if you need that shot, you need the shot, and you just have to endure the the process. Me, I love this stuff. So here we go. Another question of a worldview is, what happens to a person at death? Extinction? I mean, if you are a material being with absolutely no soul or spirit, then you'd become extinct at death. There's nothing, no sort of afterlife or anything like that. Another option is reincarnation. There are folks who think that your soul or your Atman sort of goes to another body later on, and you keep coming back to live life after life after life until you finally escape the cycle of reincarnation. There are others who would say soul survival in heaven, that the whole thing is to go to heaven as a soul or spirit when you die for eternity. And then there are others, like myself, who would say that last view about souls in heaven is a temporary waiting room until resurrection. The body resurrects to reunite with the soul forever. And then, of course, there are questions of, is there any such thing as eternal punishment or hell or all those things? But what happens at death to a person? Another question of worldviews. Why is it possible to know anything at all? And worldviews have different answers to this question. Some might say because humans evolved complex brains. And others would say because a rational God created rational beings. Others would say because we are God, that everything is just one thing. And so knowledge is simply a matter of the one God that is everything knowing itself, or himself or herself, or however you'd put that. Of course, skeptics would say that we can't know anything at all about such ultimate questions, but even they can't escape having a worldview with some kind of assumptions. Okay. Another question of worldviews is, how do we know what is right and wrong? Perhaps we know because apes and early humans began to develop rules for how we can best get along and survive. And that's really what ethics is this sort of received tradition that has evolved along with human societies. Or perhaps there is no objective right and wrong or authority above human beings. And so it's just ethics is totally relative, some would say. Or some would say, no, there is an objective right and wrong because God taught us right and wrong in some way. I would add this ethics question too. What actually makes some act or value good or bad? What's the basis of morality? And I'd distinguish that strongly from how do you know what's right and wrong? This is not about how you know. This is about what determines it? What is its basis or foundation? It's actually a metaphysics question rather than an epistemology question if you're into philosophy. But what is the basis? Is it the consequences of actions that determine right and wrong? Or is it objective values grounded in God's character and purposes? Does he give commands? Perhaps there is no standard at all, again, like the relativists would say. But can you see how these different views would result in very different decisions and lifestyles? Worldview analysis is practical. It's not some ivory tower thing that people, you know, eggheads somewhere have to just debate for fun and it doesn't really matter. These things dictate the way that we live our lives, the directions we go. And you'll find that's true of this last worldview question. What is the meaning of human history? Is it some meaningless sequence of events, which, if that were the case, it would leave you to make up your own purpose? I think that's a very appealing view today that, the purpose of my life is to be happy, and I determine my own purpose. Others would say, no, there's an objective purpose. It's to make a paradise on earth, a utopia, so we need to revolt to make it happen. Others would say, no, the purpose is to participate in God's purposes. He's the one who created us and this whole project, so he determines the purpose, like establishing a loving family to exercise beneficent dominion in creation. Or perhaps the purpose is to realize that we are all God and escape the cycle of reincarnation, which is known as the wheel of suffering in some Eastern religions. But can you see, again, how these different ideas about the meaning of life would take you in very different directions? If the meaning of your life is to realize that you are divine in one worldview, and in another worldview to realize that there is a God and you're not him, that takes you in two totally opposite directions. One is getting over yourself, and the other is you're all into yourself. These are very different ways to live your life. So this is practical. It matters for how we live. Having said that, there are a number of things that numerous worldviews agree on. A lot of worldviews agree on the need for love and civility and peace and self-control and some of the stuff we talked about in our civility program. Yet there are these very profound differences. And worldview analysis explains how it is that we've come to this point in American life where, you know, people are at each other's throats over political issues, social issues, ethics issues. There are very strong differences of opinion. And the only way to make sense of how we came to that point is we have a society with a bunch of worldviews, and we've got some people taking the side of that worldview and another person coming at it from this other completely different set of assumptions. That's why Sayer called his book The Universe Next Door, because sometimes your neighbor is living in a different worldview universe, essentially, just looking at things in a very different way. But to add to these seven basic questions of a worldview, each worldview has a view or a range of views on subjects from philosophy to biology to psychology to sociology to law to politics to economics. So obviously there's a lot to this, and it's a lot to try to introduce people to this in 29 minutes or less. But that's what we're trying to do today, at least kind of get the ball rolling to think worldviewishly. So let's just isolate. Just there are a lot of worldviews today, but there are about six that have an enormous influence in today's American culture: secular humanism, Marxism, postmodernism, New Age, Islam, and Christianity. And as you know, we roll along in various shows over the next several months, we'll introduce various ideas from those worldviews, but we're not going to define each of those today. It would take far more time than we have. But those are the major players. And all of us have to make up our minds what we believe in. I mean, all of us have something we believe. We're on a side somewhere, or we might be picking eclectically from this worldview and that and the other and throwing them in a blender. Again, we all are taking sides and have to pick a side in essence. But society does too. Society has to make up its mind about certain things because the decisions we have to make about law and morality and a lot of things are based on our basic worldview assumptions. So the scalpel is going to proceed on the assumption that it is possible to know the truth about such things. So, with that said, let's go ahead and give meaning to the notions of true and false. And we're going to use Aristotle's concept of true and false from his Metaphysics. He said, "To say of what is that it is not, or of what is not that it is false." That makes sense, right? On the flip side, Aristotle says, "While to say of what is that it is, and of what is not that it is not, is true." This is known as the correspondence view of truth. And I think when people try to argue for any other view of truth, they inevitably assume the correspondence view to try to debunk the correspondence view of truth. So that's something we can talk about some other day, but we're going to assume the correspondence view of truth on this show. All worldviews cannot be true because the worldviews have some beliefs that contradict one another on certain issues. I already illustrated that about are you God or are you not God? Because the teaching that you are God is contradictory to the teaching that you are not God. So all the worldviews can't be true at the same time in the same sense. We assume the law of non-contradiction, right? You can't be both walking and dead at the same time. Zombies, you know, notwithstanding, right? And I don't think it's uncivil or mean-spirited to say that an idea is false. Now, some folks might feel that it is mean to say that someone else's worldview and cherished beliefs is false. But if I believed what is false and nobody pointed it out because, oh my goodness, that's just not to be done, that's like condemning me to life and, who knows, maybe eternity without ever knowing the truth. I think that would be the height of non-compassion. So I have to have thick skin. I have to be able to listen to somebody say, hey, I think you're wrong about, you know, Christianity or whatever features of my perspective. That means I try to be not offendable. I find a lot of people very thin-skinned these days. We talk about the snowflakes, the people who need a safe space somewhere, you know, where they don't encounter any ideas that differ from their own. And I just don't understand. I think the courage and the self-control and the patience with others and the tolerance and the civility should kick in so that I can handle it if someone else says something that differs from what I'm saying. Let's treat each other like we're all in this together, trying to figure it all out and flourish in this world together. So with all that said, what tests can we use to evaluate worldviews? Well, I'm going to throw a few of them at you here today. The first is something we've talked about before, Is it logical? You can check out our podcast of our second show on kciw.org and see what we have to say about logic and the laws of logic and good ways to argue and all that good stuff. But a worldview can't contradict itself and be true. And fallacious arguments in support of that worldview will not help establish its truth claims. Another test, is there empirical evidence for it? A number of worldviews and religions make empirical claims. Judaism, for example, claims certain things about ancient Israel being freed from ancient Egypt a few thousand years ago. You'd expect perhaps there's some archaeological and historical evidence to support those claims, right? So you can test some of those perspectives. New Agers sometimes claim the benefits of transcendental meditation can be demonstrated with studies. Christians make a historical case for Jesus' bodily resurrection. Many of the theistic religions use the same philosophical and scientific arguments in favor of God's existence. This is one of those areas where Judaism, Christianity, and Islam can agree. We all use the Kalam cosmological argument, for example. But is there empirical evidence for it? Another test is, has it been experienced by people? Now, this one's a little bit tricky. Can you trust religious experiences? And the answer is going to be a little bit of yes and a little bit of no. Yes, in the sense that a mystical or religious experience can indicate that there is something more to existence than matter alone. But can it really tell you much specific, that's specific about what you are experiencing? I mean, that you're experiencing something non-material seems to be in evidence in some of those experiences. But what you're experiencing can't necessarily be confirmed by the experience itself. So some other tests are needed to check the content of religious experiences. So, that's my own take on the value of that criterion. But another test you can use for worldviews is, does it give the best explanation in response to the worldview questions? This is back to our logic discussion, inference to the best explanation. And there are several characteristics of the best explanation, actually three that I'll highlight for you today. First is comprehensiveness, the amount of data explained by the worldview. Does your worldview explain just a little part of reality but leave most everything else unexplained? Does it explain most of reality, or does it explain all of reality comprehensively? The more facts of experience that can be explained by your worldview, the better for this criterion. Next would be the consistency of the explanations. Do they contradict each other? If you have two different ideas in your worldview that contradict each other, that's a falsifier. That's not a good thing for your worldview. So consistency. And then lastly, coherence, the coherence of the worldview. Do these beliefs provide the most clear, coherent picture of reality? This is not unlike Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is generally preferred. That is, if you start multiplying explanatory hypotheses, it can become an issue of explaining away facts rather than explaining facts in some coherent way. And is your worldview understandable? There are some people who have attacked Christianity, for example, for its concept of God as if it's not coherent or understandable. And so they're assuming the value of this criterion, coherence. So the three things about the best explanation are C words: comprehensiveness, consistency, and coherence. See, this is like a philosophy class, isn't it? It should go without saying that evaluating worldviews is not easy. It takes mental work. And yet it's necessary. It really isn't a question of whether or not to evaluate worldviews. It's a matter of how well you do it, because I think pretty much everybody engages in a certain amount of evaluation as they hear ideas. But it should also be obvious that people do not ditch their worldview at the first sign of a problem. So two people can be having a conversation about worldviews, and one can give some what he considers a knockdown argument against the other person's worldview. And yet the other person may not instantly change their minds and, oh my goodness, you've helped me see the light and I'm gonna subscribe to your perspective now. Why is that? Well, sometimes the first person who has provided this argument might be getting impatient or angry with the other person for not changing his or her mind. Like, oh my goodness, you're just being stubborn, or worse, you're just being stupid about this. But perhaps there's more to it personally and intellectually than we know. Usually people don't believe what they do for just one reason. So knocking out one pillar under someone's worldview where there are multiple pillars won't be enough. And I think we really have to be patient with each other and understand that people don't generally change their entire perspective on life on a dime. That's just not human nature. I think this is an argument for civility, especially patience with each other. So far, we've discussed the need for civility, logical reasoning, and understanding influential worldviews. Tune in next time and we'll begin to dive into particular issues using these tools. That is, we're actually going to put the scalpel to use. We're going to quit talking about the method and actually engage in the madness. We're going to do this thing. And we're going to have fun doing it. In the meanwhile, share the link to the podcast of this show on social media so other people can listen in too, from kciw.org. And there you'll also see some documentation. I've used a lot of James Sire stuff today, both from The Universe Next Door, and those criteria for analysis come from his book, Why Should Anyone Believe Anything at All? But we've got some sources there on the podcast page you can take a look at and read up some more. Now, if you're out there listening to this saying, there is no way this is going to go well, it's just going to be a powder keg and explode on everybody if you try to talk worldviews and religions, I've been in a number of these kinds of conversations. One time I was on an airplane. It was a flight from Chicago to somewhere, and I was talking with this sociology professor. And we were talking about intellectual stuff and theological stuff, and we weren't coming from the same perspective. In fact, he was trying to talk me into the belief, pantheism, the belief that God is everything and everything is God. And he was trying to claim that that is consistent with Christianity. And of course, I was maintaining that one of the fundamental teachings of Christianity is that God exists as a personal being separate from us. He created us in his image, but we are not him. And so we had a fundamental core difference of opinion on that, and yet we were able to do the give and take. And it was civil. It was enjoyable. At the end of the flight, we're getting up and saying, wow, this time has flown by. And we both commented that this was beneficial and interesting and enjoyable. So I've seen this happen time and time and again, and I've experienced this. People can have civil, substantive dialogues. But so far, we've discussed the need for civility, logical reasoning, and understanding influential worldviews. Tune in next time, and we'll actually put the scalpel to use, dissecting some ideas, delving in using all these tools we've used, we've been talking about. But in the meanwhile, share the link to the podcast of this show on social media. You can get that at kciw.org. You can also check out some documentation. I've used a lot of James Sire's stuff from both The Universe Next Door and his book, Why Should Anyone Believe Anything at All? But thank you, everybody, for listening today, and God bless you.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
For music credits for the preceding show, go to kciw.org/credits.